This is your Anime Degens Weekly Rundown 60. Come on, man, let's get it. Well, welcome back, everybody. I have both my co-hosts here again, two times in a row. Who would have thought? Both Dan and Tyler. How are we doing tonight, Tyler?
Well, this is actually Dan's first time on the rundown in like a month.
Yeah, yeah. I'm not keeping count because I lost count.
Yeah. And I'm about to be gone for a couple of them coming up. But you know what? That's life.
Hey, man, he's living the good life, living the dream. Love that. How you doing this evening, Dan?
I'm good, man. A little tired. Did a lot of snowboarding this weekend, so a little tired, but you know how that goes.
For sure. Cool, man. Well, let's get right into it. As you guys know, best way to support us, rate the podcast, tell your friends about it. If you want to hear about any topics or questions about the latest episodes of any of our rundown shows, hit us up in the socials, linktree.com/animedegens. Discord, Twitter, Threads are the best ways to reach us. We try to keep up with y'all, man. Tyler does his best. But today on our rundown, we have a couple finales for you guys, including Undead Unluck and then Frieren, also a finale. Then we'll get into Mashal, Season 2, Episode 11, and then finally One Piece, Episode 1098. I thought we had some bangers this week, boys. What y'all think?
Definitely, dude. Definitely some bangers. Definitely some good ways to wrap up some new anime seasons from some new shows. Big fan.
Heck yeah, man. Heck yeah.
Some bangers for sure. I'm excited to talk about them today.
For sure. Yeah, I didn't think Frieren was going to be nearly this good. I still don't know if Dan's a fan or not, but I know Tyler really loves it.
Oh, I'm a fan. I'm definitely a fan. It's just a little slow at points.
Okay. I feel that.
We're gonna find out his true feelings today when we talk about what we think about it. So we're gonna see.
All right, bad. Well, anyway, you boys ready to get into it?
Let's do it. So we're gonna start with Undead Unluck episode 24, which was the finale for season one. It's called To You From Me. And if you guys couldn't tell from the beginning of the show, it is game time. We are jumping into the big finale battle. Super hyped for that. We might have had like one of the shortest training arcs in all of anime, lasting roughly an episode, but I'm not going to complain about that. So Andy and Fuko are ready to take on UMA Autumn once again. And we had some they were expected. The Under showed up. We all knew that was going to happen.
Oh, for sure. Yeah. For sure.
Well, let's get into it. So Ano no longer knows what is going to happen, because at the very end of last episode, basically with this training arc, Andy was able to save Fuko from getting killed by Unseen. So massive props to Andy there. And that's when we knew the Under was going to show up, because, well, that's when they showed up. I don't know what else to tell you. They tried to assassinate Fuko.
Yeah, it's kind of weird. Like, once we started getting to like the battle with the Autumn, they were like such a non-factor. It was kind of weird. I didn't really expect that. I thought that Rip was still gonna have some kind of grit to him, even while being a kid.
Yeah. Oh, go for it, Tyler.
It's crazy. It's crazy because he was like talking all this mad shit with Ano Un or whatever in the little house, her house or whatever. And he gets out there and hits the freaking thing and. Like he doesn't do shit. I'm like, bro, are you really talking shit when you're in this state, you know?
Yeah, you got to spit your game when you got game to spit, bro. Come on.
I mean, he was making all kinds of demands and shit. We're taking the UMA, then pulls up, can't do anything.
And you got to think, though, like, Andy could barely do anything to this freaking monstrosity, too, at the time, so...
Yeah, that's true. It was just funny. The switch up happened so quickly.
And then we got another switch up. So Ano asked for a few minutes to get the Keats success going, cooking. She's cooking something up, and she ends up drawing an artifact And this is the same artifact that was used to take Rip back into time when he was a child. That way he didn't die after the first battle with Andy and Foucault. And during this, Anno draws this up and she uses the artifact. I think they, was it the time machine? What do they call it again?
It said a time altering artifact or something like that. They didn't give it a name.
Okay, cool. I couldn't remember. And well, Rip gets aged 15 years and he's back to that killer bod. He's ready to rock. He's ready to fight. But this artifact has a huge downside. And basically the person who uses it has to give 10 times their lifespan up for what they give to someone else. So Anno ages 150 years. Were you guys ready for that?
No. That shit went dark, like, fast as hell. I'm like, bro, I thought we was fighting this fall shit. And then all of a sudden, it's killing her off, basically. She basically, like, done, like, a suicide thing, so.
He.
Oh, yeah, he.
Yeah, he.
And that, confusing. Was they sort of saying he the whole time? I was like, wait.
Yeah.
I thought she was a chick the whole time.
Yeah, it was very confusing. It seems like Akira, the actual person that made Anno, is a guy, but Anno's a girl, for sure, right?
I thought so.
No one knows. Okay, that's what that's it right there.
Ambiguous.
One thing I want to mention though is when she was actually, or he, when he, when Anno Un was creating this artifact, and I thought. And especially when it showed what it was, I thought it was a Pokeball, bro.
I was about to say, I thought she was drawing up a fucking Master Ball so they could catch Mewtwo. I'm not gonna lie,
she got me with that one too.
She was literally talking about catching it or whatever, right? So, or collecting it or something, I don't know. And then I didn't know that they could like just draw artifacts. That's wild to me, right?
Well, I mean, she can draw anything with that pen, dude. G-Liner is goated.
That's OP. Yeah,
it really is OP. But that explains why they had so many artifacts just at the ready.
Yeah, it's crazy.
Makes a lot more sense.
Well, she also had that other one, like, implanted in her chest, too, which is crazy.
Yeah probably drew that shit, too.
Or his chest.
Their chest. I'm just going to
we're going to bust this one up a million times.
Yeah, Anno Un.
So. We got to commit to something, boys.
Him. That's what they called him.
All right, bet.
Yeah.
But so after all that, Rip was really ungrateful that Anno basically sacrificed himself to age him up to the ability to the point where he could actually make a difference in that fight. And he came off as ungrateful, but I don't think he was necessarily ungrateful. I think he was pissed that she did that for him. Or he did that for him when he, like, there was no reason to do that. Like, Rip hadn't done anything for Anno, you know?
Right, right. It seemed like he thought, like, he was getting coerced into, like, owing them something. Which I thought was kind of, like, weird. It's like, hey, like, she said, like, this is going to help us win. This is the only way we can win. But he's like, nah, y'all just want something from me. Which is a little tragic that, you know, somebody does something nice for you. Like, what do you want from me?
Respect.
Okay, Dan,
always ulterior motives, dude.
Oh my god,
people aren't nice for free. Come on,
Jesus Christ.
Yeah, I also felt like that. He
who needs friends with enemies like that? I mean, who needs enemies with friends like that?
Who's nice enough to throw away their life to make somebody a buff?
Well, it's just the avatar. It's just the avatar.
That's fair.
I feel like Anno could have. Maybe possibly defeated Fall by himself, right?
Low key,
yeah.
Low key.
Maybe if he had a couple arms,
he could have drew him. Big
oof. I don't know. I don't know how long they last though, because when Anno did the volcano unlock bullet the first time, the arm disappeared right after, right?
I think that was like a function of Andy's undead power, though.
Okay. Well, I just don't know how you're going to draw yourself a bunch of arms a million times when you're holding a pen in your mouth, I guess.
I don't know. They drew the ball. Who knows?
I think at that point, like, whatever she can imagine just gets automatically drawn, I would say. I don't know, though.
Could be. Because that artifact didn't look too good on whatever him drew it on.
Yeah.
Okay, let's get away from the semantics of this because we could go on for a long
time. Let's go. Let's do it.
I'm losing myself here. So after that, we get a little flashback and we learn that Rip and Lotla accidentally killed Layla, Lotla's little sister. And do you guys think this is the moment that Rip got his unrepair ability was during this operation? Do you think before that Rip was just like a doctor, like a nice guy? And then he just like went to do surgery on this woman and sliced her open and she just kept bleeding.
I think that's a pretty high chance of that happening. Because one, everybody gets their negator abilities in the most inopportune times. And two, like, why would you be operating on somebody if you knew you were going to make them bleed out?
Yeah. You know? Especially he didn't know how to stop it at that time, right? So.
No. So yeah. I'm thinking that's what happened. But at least it's not dead parents this time, so I can just take something positive out of this.
Dead baby sister.
Oof. God damn it.
I still think he's a nice guy, though. I think that the backstory showed us that he is a nice guy and that he just, I guess, he's just putting on a facade, I think, in order to, get his goals achieved or something like that, you know?
Yeah, I wouldn't really call it a facade. I think just he knows what he has to do for his goal, and his goal is to get the arc from Juiz, and I don't think he can do that on the side of the quote-unquote good guys. I mean, I don't know if there's really any good guys in this, you know? It's just kind of a lot of gray area, in my opinion.
Yeah, I agree with the whole gray area thing. There's really no good guys. I don't like Juiz, like, a liar by omission. At least Billy's somewhat honest to people he thinks that are honest. He's like, hey, this is what we're going to do. You can have your own goals. You can do whatever you want. But when our goals align, I need y'all to show the fuck up. Got shit to do.
Young God, baby.
Yeah, exactly.
So after that, we got another flashback. There's a lot of flashbacks in this for a finale. I was kind of turned off by that a little bit. But the next flashback we get is to Fuko living with her grandfather, right? Grandfather? It was grandmother.
Yeah.
Grandfather.
And she noticed that there was a copy of To You From Me on the altar with her parents on it, like where you go to pray for your family. And that's when Fuko started reading this manga that changed her life and gave her purpose for so long. So the fact that that's her mom's favorite manga makes that even more touching, you know?
It really does. But the thing about this is, like, it makes Akira / Anno, like, the whole centerpiece of this first season, like, in a very, like, I guess, covert way. Because they gave the will for Fuko to live, that gave her time for Andy to find her in a way. It's been guiding the union. And now she's trained Andy and Fuko. I think it's kind of crazy to have a side character be a part of maybe, what, 4 episodes or something like that and be such a big part of the story.
And to mold be basically
the entire story. Yeah.
Yeah, to mold nuts. The entire story. That's crazy. And she's just in the back pulling the strings the whole time. Or
bro.
In the back, you know?
Yeah.
I think they kind of did it okay, though, because from the get-go, we knew that the book... We knew about the book, but we didn't know it. Like, it was there, but they didn't pull it out and say, hey, look at this. Look what actually matters now. But that was in episode 1, right? All that. And they even had, like, that little walking in the snow flashback in episode 1, 2 that came straight from the manga, which I actually need to go back and look at because... Wonder if that means anything now that we know what's actually going on, right?
Yeah, I've been contemplating going back and watching the first 4 or 5 episodes because they showed us a lot without telling us what it all meant. And I thought that's really good. I think that's really good storytelling overall.
Yeah,
definitely.
Yeah, like definitely an odd choice to have them be 4 or 5 episodes, being 4 or 5 episodes, but still just be a big piece. But they did it right at the very least.
This is that type of shit that One Piece be doing, Oda be doing, right?
For sure.
Yeah.
Not as grand, but yeah.
I mean,
yeah.
No shit.
We're not pulling shit from Skypiea out, you know, in the middle of Wano. But yeah, so after that, we kind of get back into the fight, and we also learned that Akira actually had Anno as like a double almost. It was basically just like a manifestation of himself that people could see because his negator ability was unseen. No, not unknown.
Unknown.
There we go.
Yeah.
And that's kind of sad, dude. That's just like this whole character's like existence is just depressing. You know, like it sucks.
So important, but yet like a nobody at the same time. No one's been able to see him since he's been in like a small child. That's crazy.
You know what's crazy to me is that we knew like Anno Un, they even told us what Anno Un meant. It meant unknown or whatever. And we just now, or I just now figured out that his negator ability was unknown. I was like, wow, that they really pulled a fast one on me there. Did y'all know like that? Did y'all have an idea about that or nah?
When they told us what Anno Un meant in like English, yeah, and it said unknown, I was like, yeah, that makes sense.
Yeah, I didn't put it together. So
Tyler, you're the one that taught me to make sure to take care when they start throwing uns out there.
I did.
I mean that, and once we kind of saw Akira's backstory too, and like, I mean, I wasn't here for that episode, but seeing his mother just like not even realize he was there, that was some tragic shit, dude.
Yo, big time. Shit was crazy. And my theory about the whole Avatar thing, I thought, and this is what I would do, I would draw a character around myself that everybody could see, so I could just be inside the character instead of like creating a third person,
like an owl. Like a Full Metal Alchemist.
Yeah, like Al. Yeah, I would have made something around me so it would be me instead of just like this avatar. But I think it ended up being a good decision because that avatar lost both of its arms. So.
It got pretty fucked up.
Yeah, it did.
Well, that's like, it makes sense because like when he lost his arm, I was like, bro, how are you just chilling right now? That's gonna kill.
Why are you smiling?
Yeah, I was like, what the fuck? But after all that, we did finally get to see Andy and Rip team up to defeat Autumn. And the way they did it was pretty cool. So they used these crazy moon-based attacks. We saw Crimson Moon Slash, whatever the hell it is. And Rip had a moon attack too, so I thought that was kind of cool. And they busted up Autumn pretty good. But Autumn used an ability that created like a hard shell around the core again. And this is when Andy shot an unluck volcano bullet, volcano hand blicky, straight into this motherfucker, which brought the unluck to it and blasted this giant UMA open.
Yo, and then, block five. Yep.
And Bunny's just the hero of the thing, man. Bunny with those weird ass hands just comes in and saves the day, dude.
Bunny's a very interesting character. I didn't know what to think of her when like she first showed up on the show
a couple
episodes ago. Agu. But I'm actually a huge fan. Yeah.
He's one of my favorite characters as well.
Yeah. I fuck with Bunny.
But after that, so Bunny gets the core and they have kind of a discussion. And Under gave the Union, so Andy and Fuko, Autumn, the artifact gun that they had taken from Fuko, and what was left of G Liner. And it kind of makes you wonder if he did this because he felt like he owed them for, you know, getting him back his original body or what. So did you guys have any thoughts on that?
I mean, he said that, but like, I don't know if he really meant that shit. Cause that's a lot to give someone just for like feeling like you owe them for something. He basically gave them all the spoils of the mission.
Except the one really cool artifact that turns you into a ghost. They kept that one, right?
Oh, the little spear.
The sphere thingy? Didn't they keep that one?
The sphere. They might. Didn't they already have one, though?
No, not the time sphere. The sphere that Anno had implanted in his chest.
Oh, shit. Maybe. No, I think maybe they did keep that shit.
Yeah, the item that blew Fuko out of her body and turned it into a ghosty ghost so she could jump into the book.
That's pretty tight. Yeah. I'd keep that, too. Yeah.
Yeah. Hell yeah.
The time sphere disintegrated, by the way.
Yeah, because it was drawn, so it went away after one use.
Yeah.
Makes sense.
But after that, you know, Fuko asked Rip, you know, like, it said it was great working. We worked great as a team, you know, like we were in sync and all this. And Rip stated that he couldn't join them because he wants the Ark. And he can't trust Chewie's because she actually kept the Ark secret from the entirety of the Union. So he's just going to steal it. Hell yeah. Yeah. I like Rip.
Yeah, he's straight up with it. Like, he's like, fuck that shit. I ain't dealing with her. I respect that because I don't trust Chewie's either. Scumbag.
The crazy thing is, though, is Anoo'un literally told him that he couldn't use it, though. You know what I mean? Like, he knows that he's not able. I guess, why trust Anoo'un, though, right? You don't know hardly anything about her.
If I'm trying to save somebody that I love, like, you tell me I can't do something, yeah. I got to figure that shit out for myself.
Yeah, I don't know.
Well, you can not tell me shit. It ain't going to matter because Andy and Fuku are going to kill God. You know, it's all good.
Yeah,
everything's straight.
One thing I do want to bring up is we talked about it before when we first seen Rip. It's his earrings. And did y'all notice that Latla's sister, the one that Rip and them killed or whatever, she had the earrings on too. So I think that that's her blood in the earrings, and he wears them as tribute, kinda.
I think that's creepy.
No, I think he has her blood in it because if they go in the Ark, she probably gets regenerated or some shit like that.
True. Okay. It has to be her. It's her earrings and her blood, though. I'm 100%. Sure. I'm 99% on that, though.
I didn't hear the word unblood, so.
No.
You know, it get didn't click here, like that.
Okay. But yeah, the last thing we see is like Juice meeting with Billy in some like snowy tundra type bullshit.
Tundra, yeah.
So we got to see what that's about. But okay, guys, I think we started watching this and just thought it was going to be some fun, lighthearted, sort of like Mashal, where it's just kind of like a little goofy and fun. This ended up being pretty deep, boys, and very heartfelt. Like, what was y'all's final thoughts on this whole season here?
Who's going first?
Go for it, man.
Go for it, brother.
Well, so, I mean, I really enjoyed it. Like, I think Dan was the one that put us onto this one. He was like, mm-hmm, something about finger, like, jetpack.
Oh, jetpack blood legs.
Yeah.
Hell yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. That's basically the reason why we watch this shit. So, but I felt like it really had like a great pace. It had like great balance. It had some comedy going for it. There's a lot of funny things happening, but it also had like a lot of serious moments as well. It was pretty balanced, I feel like. And it's got that little bit of love story going on with Andy and Fuko and, you know, all that stuff too. So, I mean, it didn't really bore me any, and I'm hoping we get a season two. I'm sure we will. I think this was, like, pretty popular, so.
This shit hit. Yeah, it's pretty popular.
But. Yeah, definitely. I think for me, there was, like, kind of, like, towards, like, the second half of the middle.
Like, around episode 10 to 15.
Yeah.
It's like kind of like, I was like, what are we doing here?
Yeah, it kind of, like, dropped off a little bit. And then once they kind of introduced Anoo'un and G-Liner and this whole like overarching plot device that we had no idea about, it like drew me right back in. There was like a couple weeks when I was traveling and doing everything, like I didn't even stay up to date in this show just because, one, it wasn't on Crunchyroll, so I wasn't downloading it when I was on planes.
Yeah.
So that's kind of on me. But at the same time, I was like, I'll watch it. I'll get to it. You know, like it wasn't like, oh, I'm really excited for Undead Unlock. But like,
right.
This week, I was like in my camper watching it on my phone. You know, like I was like, I want to see this finale.
Yes. Yeah, it definitely heated up. It was kind of the same for me. It started off pretty well. It was a little cringy at first. They were kind of going for a lot of the fan service with Fuko. I think the first like six or seven or eight episodes or so. Once they kind of got away from that, it was good for a few episodes, and then like Dan said, it was a little bit of a lull for me as well. But overall, I got a lot more out of this as far as plot, story writing. Loving the characters. The characters are freaking great. Some really good characters on this show. Thought it was really good overall. I was very surprised. I thought we were just going to be sitting around laughing at this shit.
Yeah, they're sick. Wicked sick.
Wicked sick.
Would y'all say like Billy turning on the Union was like a pretty big bring y'all back kind of energy?
Hell yeah.
Yeah, I think that was the moment when like I was like, oh, this is getting sweet again, you know, like this is when it's starting to turn and get like interesting and like we're getting like, I mean, betrayal is always such a good plot point. Like, you gotta love it, you know? Like, you can't go wrong with somebody betraying, like, an organization or somebody else. Like, that's just classic story writing.
Oh, 100%. Like, the whole arc with, like, Spoil was, like, meh. That whole part of the season was meh. But before and after that, I think that was cool.
It was cool. Yeah, Spoil was really sad. That, like, kind of hit me in a different way. Like, that teacher was a fucking badass for hanging on to humanity as long as she did.
Yeah, she was cool as fuck. Like I said, yeah, more good-ass characters, even the side characters. Anno Un, 4 episodes, but is probably my favorite character in the show so far. It's nuts.
The goat.
Yeah, for real.
Well, you boys want to get some ratings?
Yeah.
Or you got someone else?
I'm good.
I guess I'll go first since I went first last time. I'll give it a solid 8. It is like right on the dot 8. It was going to be in the 7s, but I think the ending of this kind of pushed it up to that 8. So I really enjoyed the way they done. Well, it was like Bass said, Anno Un was really good for the show. So
hell yeah. Well, we'll let you go last, Dan, since you picked it. So I'll let you go first there, but Tyler's a little jumpy today. but yeah, I'm going to go right around what Tyler did. I'm going to do like a 7.9. I just didn't want to use 8 because Tyler used 8. But yeah, it's right there, man. It is really good.
I'm going to go 7.2. Okay. There were some spots that, you know, it kind of lost my interest. And while the finale was really good, I don't like at like if they could have taking that finale and made it 2 episodes and had the flashbacks, but had more action, I think it would have been better because like, this is the final fucking boss of the season. And we saw like 4 minutes of action. And that kind of bugged me. I'm like, you know, we've been like hyping this up. Like we had a whole training arc for it and it was like 6 slashes and Autumn went down, you know?
I mean, that is a good point because a good portion of this show is kind of about the fights and the choreography we get out of it. So I agree with that. I agree with that criticism for right there for sure. But overall, I thought it was really good. It was more of like an emotional ending. And that's one of the things I did not expect to get out of this show. It's a lot of emotional scenes in it.
Oh, yeah. And I mean, a 7.2 for me is pretty good.
Yeah, that's solid. That's solid as fuck.
Yeah. Yeah, cool. This show had me crying on a Monday, so it is what it is.
Well, you boys ready to get into some Frieren?
Let's do it.
Yeah, so Frieren, episode 28, the finale. It would be embarrassing when we meet again. And basically, Ciri wraps up this final round of testing, and the mages begin to go their separate ways. But first, we have to learn a little bit more about Dinkin and Ciri. And this episode basically opens up with Ciri passing Dinkin, and we happen to get some backstory on the old man, finally. I've been waiting for it for a minute, and we finally got it. We learned that he's actually a military mage and one of the most influential people in the Northern Lands. And when he walked in to meet Ciri, in order, because if y'all remember, Ciri was, I guess, the third stage of this test or whatever, and he walks in and he's thinking about how to fight Ciri, how he could win against Ciri. So I thought that was pretty cool that he actually said that and stuff. Did y'all have any thoughts on that?
Yeah, bro. Like he's a real stepper. Like we saw this, you know, he's the only mage we've seen fight with his hands. He's knocking young kids out. He's trying to go at elves. Like I fuck with this guy.
Heavily.
Yeah.
So did you not know that an imperial mage meant a military mage? I'm just curious on that one because I knew he was a mage in the military from like the fucking start. Was that not apparent? I'm just confused.
No, I didn't know it. So.
Oh, okay.
Well, if you're an imperial mage, I mean, I guess you could be, but he seemed like a desk jockey to me, to be honest. Yeah, he's old. That's what, maybe that's why it seemed like that to me. But you could be Imperial, like you could be Imperial Envoy, like something like that. I don't think it necessarily, like, just the title means you're a military person.
Oh, I just think Imperial Mage. I think back to Skyrim, and I'm like, yeah, these guys fucking box.
Okay, maybe that's what they were going for.
Well, usually when you're an Imperial Knight, you're an Imperial something, you're in the military, you know? Like, that's just kind of how it goes, I guess, you know?
Yes, for the Empire.
The Empire. Fuck yeah.
But before he gave hands to them kids, I definitely thought he was a desk jockey, but there was definitely something there once he dropped the staff.
I felt like he was like a strategist or something. That's what he felt like to me. So
yeah, but I guess to get to that point, you've gotta work your way up the ranks, you know. Yeah. So like he's boxed for a long time.
Oh, for sure.
He misses the battlefield if you can't tell.
He didn't even think about it either, bro. He's like, nah, we better take this shit.
And so to get back into it, like Dinkin was the first one that came in. Then we got Ubel coming in, and she just walks up and just stands there, and Ciri's just like, pass. And Ubel's just like, bro, what? We didn't even talk. What are you doing? So, like, why? What was your opinion on that? Why do you think Ciri was able to pass her just from her walking in and just standing there?
I think Ciri just understands how broken Ubel's magic is. And, like, I don't ever want to get on her bad side. I would be freaking chopped liver.
Yeah, for sure. And, like, even going, like, past that and, like, the type of magic she uses, like, Ciri's all about, like, visualization because that's what the magic system is. Like, you have to be able to visualize something to do it. And that's all Ubel does. She's like, yeah, I don't really know how magic really works, but I know if I can think something up, I can fucking do it. If I can, if I think I can cut it, I can cut it.
Yeah.
And Ciri's like, I respect that. I respect that shit.
You take a pair of scissors to Ciri, she's definitely going to lose some hair, get a little scratch on her, you know?
Yeah, yeah. So I fuck with Ubel, but yeah, I was a little surprised that like she passed her without even like saying anything.
I think for me, like the whole theme of Ciri's test, I think was the fact if they came in there and wasn't scared of her and like showed promise on, you know, not being scared of her and not being, because I feel like if you're a first class mage, you would come in there and you would assess the situation and not show your fear or whatever, right? I think right. That was a big component to her passing people. And when Ubel came in there and stood there with just a smile on her face, like that little shitty grin, you know, she's like, okay, and this chick's not scared.
Oh, she's also just reeking of bloodlust.
Like, yeah. So, I was about to say she's a sociopath.
Yeah.
She doesn't have fear.
She's not scared. She's excited. Yeah. She wants to catch you up.
Yeah, for sure.
But I thought that was fun, the way they showed that. And like even the one with that was specialized in the woman, I don't know what she specialized in.
It was like hypnosis and shit like that.
Yeah. She come in and she's like, what did you think of me when you first saw me? And she's like, you're a cute little girl or whatever.
Kawaii. I mean,
yeah, kawaii, you know? And I'm like, she's not scared. She's, you know, she thinks you're cute and she's still a pastor. So I didn't think she was all that, but just because she wasn't scared of Ciri, she passed her. So it was an interesting.
Yeah, it was an interesting little test there. Yeah.
Yeah. Another one that came in was Land. And apparently, him and his clones, he was getting shit done with his clones and he never left his hometown. He was sitting there sipping tea. Just while he was doing the shit, man, my man is Naruto. What did y'all think about that?
It was crazy. I did not see that coming at all. I was thinking maybe he never like went into the test itself, but to stay in your hometown is crazy work.
Dude, when the camera just panned and zoomed out like 150 something miles away and just showed him sitting there sipping tea like Kermit the fucking Frog, I was crying.
Yeah.
Yo, and his magic is low key OP, because like he can just probably just hoard your ass, and then like all his clones can use magic. Yeah, dude's a problem. Dude is a problem. Thank God, like, he's Cho.
The fact that Ubel, who he was like with through this entire test didn't even notice. It's just hilarious too. Like,
yeah, she's a little dumb. She's a little dumb. I thought they were just messing with her, but yeah, she's a little dumb.
I thought my man was there. I thought like the second clone or whatever that came in, it was him, but apparently he never did step foot there. So
I think he actually fucks with Ubo though, because like, why would he like just leave his clone? He could just like just disintegrate the fucking clone if he wanted to.
But then he's got to make a new clone. He's got to walk the new clone all the way out there, you know?
I mean, he already had a shit ton of clones. A couple of them got destroyed. I'm sure he's got more around the city.
I feel like he had the master clone there, you know? Like, that's his main guy. And then he was just making other clones as he went.
Number one clone.
I just wonder with his ability, like, obviously, he has to make them and stick them somewhere because, you know, in the dungeon scene, he came from outside a dungeon and he didn't just like materialize where he was needed, right? So I just wonder how all that works. I hope we get to know like kind of about that.
I think he can just make a second clone from his clone. That's kind of what I was saying with like the master clone. So
yeah, I think he was
just making more on the fly, which is totally broken.
It really is.
And you think him entering from like the dungeon doors was just a trick, a play to make people think that that was the second one, the real one, or whatever?
He's got to keep up the facade. Yeah.
He's ball busting, dude. Heavy.
Yeah. And the fact that he got in there right on time. Yeah.
Convenient.
Right.
But to answer your question, Baz, I'm down to ship Ubel and land. Not going to lie. I'm down for that.
Yeah.
So.
Yeah, I don't usually go for this, but like, yeah, homeboy showed his card for sure.
Imagine Ubel with that shit, bro. She would be nasty. Nasty as hell.
I really hope she never gets that, because that's a problem for everybody.
But next, we actually got Siri. She's actually surprised. She's like, you know, this was actually like a crazy crop of, you know, contestants. They're better than average. You got like a lot more. And she kind of apologizes to Sense. She's like, I'm sorry, because I was mistaken. I thought Furin and, you know, kind of carried them, but they could have done this shit on their own. So
yeah, if Furin's not there and her clone's not there, they would have been fine.
Yeah, for sure. And then we actually get into like the little slice of life type deal going on in this episode with Dinkin treating Fern, Stark, and Lothan to some treats. We learned that his wife died when he was young. He has no children. He has no wife now. And just after she died, Ciri started the Magic Association, which offered the one spell privilege or whatever if you get accepted. And he seemed to believe that becoming a first class mage could have helped save his wife's life. Do y'all agree with that?
So when he said privilege, I didn't know he was talking about the privilege of having one, pretty much a wish granted, whatever spell you want, right?
Yeah,
it's basically she's basically a genie. I thought she was more talking about like societal privilege, like becoming a noble and things like that from being a good mage. But I definitely think that like a spell could have saved her life. If Dinkin was at the time motivated to save his wife, he would have became a first class mage a long time ago.
Yeah, I understand.
Yeah, and it's interesting because at that point too, didn't he say that he married into a noble family?
Yeah.
So, like, he already had that type of privilege. So, I was a little confused with that, too, until they started talking about, like, the privilege ceremony and getting your spell and, like, your first class mage ranking and all that kind of stuff. So,
true. It seems like he married into, like, a low-level noble family, though, because he was, you know, like, it that's what it kind of seemed like to me. Because, like, you don't have anybody around you that can save her. You're not, like, the cream of the crop noble family, I don't think. I think he made that himself.
Yeah, I guess it depends what the illness was. I mean,
true.
Yeah, it didn't really elaborate on that. So we just know it was fatal or whatever. So,
yeah, I mean, when homies want to get healed, they go to church. So, like, I don't know how good the medical system is in this world.
Good God.
I mean, you know, it is what it is.
I don't know how they're doing against like tuberculosis in the free run world, you know?
Smallpox, all that shit.
But yeah, Dinkin also revealed that he was actually inspired to become a mage and by Frieren and a Heroes Party, and that she actually, during this whole exam, she reminded him that magic could be fun again. That was pretty neat to see that he actually like looked up to her or whatever. So
yeah, we got to see a couple characters that like looked up to like the Heroes Party or Frieren in general. So yeah, that was a pretty cool ending. I think this was a good episode to put it in to kind of like frame their impact on the world a little bit more than Definitely. They've already done. Yeah.
And then we go to see Werble. He's actually surprised how cold Frieren can be since she's a part of the Himmel's Hero Party. You start to think like, why do you think like Frieren hesitated to help the lady with the spilled oranges? It seemed like to me she was going to try to help her, but then she hesitated or whatever.
Yeah, I don't really understand Frieren. She seems like a cold person in general. Yeah, she lives thousands of years upon thousands of years, but like, damn, the lady dropped all her fucking oranges and you know magic. Like, pick them shits up. Quit being a bitch.
Hey, she had a handful of books, okay?
Like, she doesn't need her hands. That's the whole thing.
You gotta put them down and then you gotta strut over there and just Werble beat her to the punch, you know?
Yeah,
And then talk shit.
I would have too. It's like, what the fuck were you doing? You know, maybe, but never meet your idols. Seen. Jesus Christ.
Yeah, maybe she's seen Werble though, right? Maybe she was like, oh, he's gonna help, right?
Cap. Y'all trying to cover for this elf. Whatever.
But yeah, that was a pretty neat scene. But we've seen in the past, like, Fern has been the one to have to tell Frieren, hey, we need to do this. We need to help so-and-so out or whatever, right? And Fern wasn't there that time, so.
Yeah, I think she, you know, at one point during this season, Fern was going to let somebody drown in mud slowly, just real slow, like.
Wasn't that a sign?
Sign. Yeah, it was sign, yeah. Like, what is wrong with you? Like, don't you value life? Like, what the fuck?
You know what, man? She's done enough. She's retired.
She defeated the demon, bro.
Imagine you fucking drowning. Some dude woke up to you. I'm retired.
I'm sorry.
Oof. A lot of work here. Is there a grimoire I can get at the end of this? Let me know.
What can you offer me, my good sir?
I don't want an orange. I want a book.
I will tell the next town up that you're here, though. But yeah, I guess moving on from all that, Fern actually goes to the Magic Association to collect her reward for becoming that first class mage, her privilege from Ciri, one spell of any kind. And we learned that Ciri is actually forbidden Fern from going into any Magic Association building for 1,000 years. But that won't be, there'll be no time, you know, before she's able to go back into it. So,
yeah, no time for the elf. But Ciri is petty as hell.
I love it.
Really?
I love me some petty.
Okay.
She's salty. She's got, you know, Frieren basically was like, nah, I don't want to be your student. So she's like, fuck this bitch. She's out.
She's out.
But like, I think it's funny that they're like, oh, you can't come in for 1,000 years. And like, it was probably like 4 or 5 episodes ago now. And Frieren's like, yeah, I just stopped keeping up with this shit because every 500 years or so, like, one magic organization topples and another started. This shit ain't going to last 500 years. Come on.
I mean, with Ciri at the helm, it might. It might. We'll see.
Yeah, unless somebody takes her out. You know what I mean?
That'd be impressive.
Maybe she's the new Demon King. Ooh.
Maybe. Who knows? But I thought this episode was going to be kind of chill, and then we actually get into like something that kind of surprised me. Frieren and Stark was kind of just waiting outside. They talk about how Fern will become a more famous mage than Frieren actually is. Which is possible. The way she's getting shown right now. So because we know she's a real deal.
Right. And like I mean, the whole first half of this season, I mean 3/4 of it, I was asking for some scaling for Fern. Fern was very powerful, but yeah, now that we're seeing Fern has got a lot of potential. Looking at you, Megumi from JJK. but yeah, I was kind of surprised to learn that she's so talented. I thought she might be like above average, but like one of the best human mages possibly. Like, it's kind of nuts, you know?
I mean, that's what you get when you're, I guess, that dedicated and passionate, and you got someone like...
But she really don't even like magic like that.
But she was passionate about it because of Heiter, though.
Yeah, so, at the beginning, that's true.
But then we get to the actual part. While they're just chilling there, Lernan actually pulls up, and he apparently wants to kill Furin so that he can go down in history and that Ciri won't be alone. And what did y'all think about this? Because I kind of didn't understand his logic. Like, why would he have to kill Furin for Ciri to not be alone, unless he is saying that he kills Furin to make Fern be able to be her student, Ciri's student. Right? That's the only thing I could get out of it.
I don't think it was that. I think it was that he didn't understand how much Ciri actually cared for her students. And he was like, I've got to kill Frieren because then I will be a legendary mage for killing the legendary mage of the Heroes Party. And I'll go down in history. That way Ciri will remember me. That's what I got out of it.
Yes. Yes. I think that's definitely what he was going for. Also, that's some bitch shit.
Yeah.
Put plainly. Yeah. I thought that was a pretty weak move by Lernan. We already saw him get, you know, kind of like talked down to by Ciri, and kind of seemed like Ciri doesn't have a lot of at least outward respect for him, talking to him like she did. And then he goes and does some bullshit like this. And I was like, dude, what are you doing? I thought it was really weak overall.
I didn't expect it at all. I thought he was there to like just I guess talk and kind of congratulate or whatever, you know, apologize for Ciri being, you know, being a bitch or whatever. And then he pulls up this car and I'm like, bro, what are we doing here? You can't like pull up on her like that. You ain't got what it takes, you know?
Yeah.
So
and then he got turned around and Fern's like, yeah, this is a waste of time. Which really would have pissed somebody off if this was real life. They wouldn't have been like, oh, what do you mean? They'd be like, nah, now we got to fight.
Yeah, you're asking for hands at that point.
Yeah, yeah.
Or
that's crazy. Wands. For sure.
Ciri actually goes on to state that most of her students haven't gotten to her level. So do y'all think there's actually someone out there that can like defeat Furin or like match her?
It's potentially, because she said most. So she's made students at least as strong as she has before.
Well, Flamme.
Flamme would be number one.
Yes. Well, she called Flamme a failure because she never got as strong as her. So she's made people more powerful than Flamme, is what I took from this. She called Flamme a failure.
She called Flamme a failure because she didn't share the same ideals as her.
Yeah.
And she wanted to like use magic for fun, not just to be all powerful.
Gotcha.
She wanted to spread the magic in the world or whatever, and Ciri didn't want that. She wanted to use it, like Dan said, for power. That's why she was a failure. Flamme was actually dubbed the greatest mage of all time, right? Or something like that, far as we know.
Right, but that's also because she started like the whole continental magic bullshit, and she taught everybody magic. I don't necessarily think that means she was the outright strongest of all time.
Yeah, and that's just how she's portrayed, you know, for us. But I definitely think that she's probably the most strongest that Ciri has put out. It's just that she's a failure because just like Frieren's a failure to her. Even though Frieren is obviously really, really strong, she's still a failure in her eyes. she's not worthy of a first class mage even in her eyes. So
okay. But yeah, but, there might be somebody lurking out there that can fuck with her. And
yeah, I mean, we just finished season one. There's got to be a bigger baddie out there.
Yeah, for sure.
Because if this entire show goes without Furin being challenged a single fucking time besides by a sand clone of herself, that is going to take it down a few pegs for me.
That would be crazy.
Well, see, I don't really think it's about that, though. I think it's about bringing in the new, like, era, like the new generation, kind of, with her as, like, learning how to deal with her I guess feelings or whatever, learning how to feel what she feels, I guess.
Be a well-rounded adult and like learning.
So but all of the townspeople actually love Stark, end up loving Stark. Do you think he's like Himmel the hero? Are they kind of setting him up to be the hero of this party, or like, what do y'all think?
Maybe not like the hero. Like as they were saying, like Fern's probably going to be more famous than Furin, but I definitely think he's going to have like a large part in that legacy, because I think most people are going to remember Stark over Fern, because Stark is always in the town just helping people out like Himmel did.
Yeah, true.
And they're going to fuck with him heavy in history.
Yeah, there's a lot of similarities between them, so.
What'd you say there?
Statues.
Yes, for sure. Statues, for sure.
That's one thing. That's one similarity I don't think he has. I don't think he has the like confidence that Himmel had, you know. I think he's more humble, I guess. I don't know.
You're talking about Himmel, that fraud who claimed to have the magical sword, or like the freaking Excalibur of this world, and he couldn't pull it out of the stone, so he just had a knockoff made. That fraud.
What they don't know don't hurt him, bro. So, all that matters, he got the job done.
Perception is reality.
I know.
So I guess to kind of close this episode out, before we get to like the ratings and final thoughts, Fern chose a spell. She chose the spell that she doesn't have to do laundry anymore, the fresh clothes spell. I really enjoyed it a lot because, you know, it pissed Ciri off. You know, it pissed Ciri off. And that's why I enjoyed it.
I just love the fact that Fern hates doing laundry so much and being dirty. That is the one thing that comes to her mind. Like, she could have had absolute power. She could have had like a crazy explosion spell, or like the ability to bring people back to life, literally anything. And she's like, nah, I want to smell like fucking Tide and what are those boost pods you throw in the dryer?
Dane or whatever.
Dane. Yeah, Snuggles, the Dane pods. Yeah. Give me some dryer sheets, bro.
I thought it was definitely low-key a great spell to pick, because fuck laundry. Especially exactly. When you don't have a washing machine and dryer. Like, yeah, let's just you know, magic that shit up right quick. Fresh pressed.
Everyone is happy with it. So.
Oh, of course she was.
She was happy because she freaking basically gave Ciri a giant middle finger.
That's why I loved her so much.
I was really hoping she made a joke about Stark smelling bad during this like exchange, because I thought that would have been hilarious.
That would have been good. Hey, but the whole party's about to be fresh. Yeah, all exactly. The time.
So fresh and so clean.
Yeah. And to truly end it off, the ending scene. I really enjoyed the ending scene. Himmel says that they don't do quick goodbyes because that way they avoid the embarrassment. And I just enjoyed how they did this. They done it. They paused it right time. Like Himmel was saying, we don't do quick goodbyes. We only do quick goodbyes or whatever. We don't do crying. And then the ED was rolling and it's like crying endlessly or whatever. And then it just keeps on going with the thing. But all I know to say is I'm definitely going to be embarrassed when I meet him again, because that shit was sad. I was crying as the ending was rolling there. That goodbye scene, they done it perfectly. So,
yeah, hell of a season. Really hell of a season.
Top tier shit.
Yeah, I'm a lone goodbye person. I'm a bit of a cry every once in a while.
I'm a quick goodbye person. I'm gonna like give your buddy a hug and say see you soon, bud, and just walk away.
And I'm just like standing there crying at the floor.
If y'all don't catch me, then I might be gone before I say goodbye. So
the old Irish goodbye is actually my preferred, but I'm a nice guy.
I'm trying to get away from the Irish goodbye at parties and social gatherings. I'm trying to be a better person. A little PG, a little personal growth.
Walking out the door with deuces thrown behind me. See ya.
Mm-hmm. This is the best way, bro.
Yes, people started getting mad at me, and I was like, I gotta stop this. But guys, was not expecting this out of Frieren, the Slayer, beyond Journey's End, whatever we want to call it. Thoughts, bros. Thoughts. Like, what was this like for you guys? Tyler, you went first last time. We're gonna have Dan go first this time.
Oof. I mean, dude, this is just an experience, man. Like, it was such a good, incredible show. Like, this is like the equivalent of Lord of the Rings in anime for me.
There you go.
There were some slow spots, you know, but with a journey, you're not going to have action all the time. For rating, it's a very high 8. I'm going to go like 8.9.
Dude, 8.9. Yes. Yeah. I definitely feel that. I'm going to go off the same vein. It was definitely like Lord of the Rings for me. It was just like the day in the life of, but they made every episode feel special for one reason or the other. We're either learning something about the world, the characters, they're having great moments with each other or side characters. I was blown away. The first three episodes, I was like, what the fuck is this? Like, what are we watching? But I think by episode 6 or 7, I was like, yo, this is gas. And then it just kept up the whole season. And I don't think there's a ton of anime like this that have come out in the last maybe 5 years or so. So hats off to the mangaka for this one. Hats off to the studio for making this. This was fantastic. The animation was really, really cool. A lot of chromatic abrasion, I noticed that. They did a lot of that to make the animation look pretty cool and unique, in my opinion. But overall, a score, yeah, I think I'm gonna go like an 8.6. I could definitely go higher, but I'm trying to save my nines.
hence the 8.9.
yeah, 8.6 to 8.8 range. Like, it's phenomenal, man. It's phenomenal. I try to save nines for like my top five.
I will say, like, so this is an incredible show, but I don't think it breaks my top 10 just because it's not like my preferred anime genre, if that makes sense. I went into it very objectively, like not like, yeah, it's not a shonen though, you know?
Right. I definitely went into it like that as well. I was like, what the fuck? But yeah, it made me interested in it. And it could get better with more seasons. It could definitely go up in score, but this first season, I'm going to give like an 8.6, 8.7. Yeah.
Well, you know, I'll try to keep this kind of shorter. I could go on like a big rant about it, you know, whatever. This show is peak. It was pretty refreshing, because we hadn't seen like anything like this in a while. Just like what Bass said, we hadn't seen anything like this. It has like great world building. You know, I'm a big fan of great world building, with One Piece being my number one or whatever. It also had like all the beautiful, like well thought out scenes and the animation, and all of that goes extremely well with what they're trying to portray and what they're trying to tell over the story. And I actually enjoyed watching it weekly. It had a great mix of all these fantasy elements, slice of life, even, you know, I'm a big slice of life kind of guy. And they handled time skips really, really well. You don't see that very often, but the majority of like the first half of the show was a lot of time skips, and it didn't feel like there was like, it didn't feel bad. It felt perfect. It felt good. So the fact that they was able to do that very well was a good job to them. I mean, it was just perfection. Madhouse done a beautiful job on adapting it. I can't wait to see more. this is a must watch. It's a 10 out of 10 for me. Peak.
Okay.
Welcome to my top 10, Freerun, because shout out to Hilmo. So.
Yeah, I, it's definitely good as fuck. People need to watch this shit. It's good as fuck. Yeah, like it's, I was excited to watch it every week. It was a perfect Friday night right before I'm like about to fall asleep and go to bed, put this on for 30 minutes and then go to sleep. It's just like a good Friday vibe. Like, it's so chill. You're in the work week. You're busy, busy, busy. And then you can like kick back and relax the end of Friday with this. Phenomenal. Friend Friday was real.
Yeah, it will be missed. Like I said, this was such a great show. I'll miss like discussing it on the socials and like in other Discords and stuff like that, because Fridays was a day I looked forward to. So it was really good. And the fact that like you had Furin and like Apothecary Diaries, I know we didn't do Apothecary Diaries, but those two are like some of the greatest pieces of fiction that I've seen, like outside of like obviously One Piece or whatever, in the past, you know, in the recent times. So, but
excellent. Yeah. Well, you boys ready to get into some mash? I think we glazed Furin up enough.
Yeah.
Okay. No, but great show. If you didn't watch it, watch that shit right now. But guys, next we have Mashle, Magic and Muscle, Season 2, Episode 11, Mash Burn Dead and the Origin of the Greatest Magic User. Sorry, Dan's being a fool right now. So Mash just saved Wahlberg after he got dog-walked. And Izzy kind of gets a little lazy towards the end of the fight and leaves, but he is nice enough to leave a nice little parting gift for Mash and the Magic Academy. Great guy. Love him. So we started this episode with Mash running on air again. It's a callback to the first season where they were playing Quidditch. I think that's what it's called. And
well, in Harry Potter, not in Mashle, though.
Not in Mashle.
Well, not in Mashle. I know that's what it's called in Harry Potter, I think. Yeah.
I don't know what it's called in Mashle. It's some kind of bullshit. So.
Yeah, it's not important. It's Quidditch. Yeah.
there we go.
So, sensing Wahlberg, that Wahlberg was in trouble, also Rio went off to save him. But we saw the kick, the knee to the face of old IZ Innocent Zero, and I thought that was a really funny moment. But I was kind of hoping last week that they were gonna make Mash be doing something else in the air instead of the whole running thing. And of course, he's pumping those legs and levitating once again. But after the fight's over, pretty much over, IZ straight up stole Wahlberg's magic and ends up with a stronger version of this shit. And he also somehow stole the wand that Wahlberg was using. I'm very confused about what the fuck was going on with that shit.
Well, just like I said, I think I said in last episode that my man is Blackbeard. So
oh damn. Okay.
That's who he reminds me of. So
I mean,
stealing powers and shit.
He did say he stole the darkness magic before stealing Wahlberg's magic with a dark abyss looking cloud. So, I mean, checks out.
Yeah.
It does check out, actually. Yeah. Fair enough, boys. Fair enough.
Slightly more attractive version of Blackbeard.
It's only slightly. And that's even that is debatable. Depends on what you like. So Izzy also wants Mash for his body, so he can hold more magic power. And I think that's what Dan was tripping on just a few minutes ago. But I was
tripping because somebody put a winky face in the notes. And I was like, when did we start doing that shit?
I put winky faces where they're needed, sir.
It's not sexual at all.
But maybe it is.
He wants to absorb him.
Maybe this is actually Bravern, bro.
Bro.
Oh my God, bro. We're not doing that shit right now.
Leave my man out of your mouth right now. He's pulling some cell shit and he's sucking him up.
What, say it again?
He's pulling some cell shit from Dragon Ball and he's sucking him up.
Pause. Oh. Pause.
They can't see your hands over there, Dan. They don't.
That's fine. They can imagine what I'm doing.
That's why I put the winky face, boys and girls.
I will leave that to the listener's imagination, what motion I was making with my hands.
That's bad. They watch anime, bro. Like,
yeah,
they,
we already
got
know
people
where
like Kriegs out there watching Chain Soldier and gushing. You think they're gonna come away with that? Come out of that with a good thing?
Oh, I don't care what they think. They're gonna
terrible,
laugh.
Terrible imagery. Terrible imagery there, right there for me. Stop, Dan. So, something happened that surprised me. Like, Mash showed up and they're barely able to dodge the magic that IZ's throwing out. And for some reason, Homeboy's just like, you know what? I'm not feeling this anymore. It's time for me to go. I know I came here to one, kill Wahlberg, take Mash, and probably destroy their school because I'm just that guy. But he ends up leaving. Do y'all understand why he did that? Am I missing something here?
Yeah, you're missing something big. His body was literally like falling apart on the screen, dude. You didn't notice his forehead.
I mean, like, yeah, I saw that, but like, he definitely had them in the bag. Like, they were dead. Wahlberg is half fried. Bro's dude, looking like bacon.
Well, he's looking like half a piece of bacon.
I mean, yeah.
But no, I think he just knew that if he stayed there and kept fighting for any amount of time longer, his body was just going to like disintegrate essentially.
Okay.
And yeah. I mean that's what Wahlberg said too. He gave us kind of like a commentary on it, and then before Innocent Zero left, he's like, you know, I got to go. I got to get more accustomed to this new power.
True.
Or my body's got to get more accustomed to this new power or something like that. So
yeah, I think I would have taken Mash at least, though, but I don't know, because it seemed like Mash was pretty ineffective against him after that initial, like, knee, because he wasn't expecting it. So I think he could at least kidnap Homebuddy. Oh, buddy, but hey, plot. It's not that deep. But yeah, just before leaving, old Innocent Zero decides to combine those, like, demon ogre-looking things into one huge monster with a million heads, just to see if Mash can defeat it. And as this monster is throwing debris at the stadium, we got another cutscene of Lance's sister. I thought we might get through the second half or the rest of this season without seeing Lance's sister giving him power, which is fucking nuts. And Dot ends up breaking the fourth wall for the second straight episode by saying, "What was that cutscene just now?"
I'm with him.
Yeah, I mean, we're all thinking that, but
I was fucking hyped when Dot just broke the fourth wall. I was like, "Fuck yes, we're getting just ignorant with this anime now." I'm fucking here for it.
Oh, okay. I hope they don't start overusing it though, because they just did that shit last episode too.
Yeah, I mean, what else they got? Like, what else they got like going for it though? Outside of like the comedy aspects, because. Dude, I mean, I thought this season was going to be more serious, and especially since we didn't get like door jokes and like all that shit. It was hopping up like a lot of fights and stuff, and we got some pretty decent fights. And then all of a sudden, the big baddie that we've been kind of talking about or whatever, it just leaves.
He's just fucking dipped.
Yeah.
Hey, man.
I guess they need a big baddie for next season, too. I don't know.
I was about to say, you know, there's a lot more volumes of Mashal that they got to animate, so they can't just get rid of the big baddie that fast.
Yeah.
Or Mash. I mean, what? Either the big baddie loses his battle, leaves, or he absorbs Mash and the show's over.
We definitely could have gotten a Mash rescue arc.
No, we don't need that.
No rescue arc?
Bro, we don't need a rescue arc. Nah,
come on. Nah.
Overplayed. Overdone.
What if Mash got absorbed by Innocent Zero and then Mash took over his body and gained magic, bro?
Mash ain't built like that, dude. Innocent Zero
Mash is quite literally built like that.
Yeah, this is his show, bro.
He has not taken over the body of the strongest mage to ever exist. He just literally absorbed the magic of the
Mash got the strongest body. That's the whole point. Mash got the strongest body. Built different.
I'm saying,
just like Naruto is named after Naruto, this is named after Mash. It ain't named after Innocent Zero. So,
hey,
dude, if that was the end of the show, and it was just Mash absorbing Innocent Zero's body, going honk, and then just starting like using time magic. I would give this like a 1 out of 10. That would be awful.
If they don't do that, I'm gonna give it a 1 out of 10.
Honk.
Where's my cream puff?
Dude, as long as there's a door joke, they get out of 10 out of 10 from me.
Yeah.
Well, this season's a 0 out of 10 then.
Yes.
Yeah.
Most definitely. But during this whole fighting back against that giant demon, my man, Margaret, ended up helping save the students, bro. I've been telling y'all he's not a bad guy. He's just misunderstood. That's
I liked him, so.
I fuck with it.
Yeah.
Isn't he technically a lady right now?
I meant to say they. We all, that's what everybody calls them, they. Yeah. They're just misunderstood. See, even I misunderstood. See? See?
He's a legend, but though.
They're not they're not a bad guy. They just like to throw hands. And that's Vast's favorite kind of character.
Yeah, I fuck with it. Like, they just want to fight strong people. Like, yeah. Kenpachi from Bleach? Yeah. When he left the portion of the shows, I don't even watch this shit no more. But beyond that, I definitely found myself like taking Mash too serious the last few episodes. And I was going to ask you guys, is Innocent Zero like a good, well-written villain? But then I'm like, who the fuck cares? This is Mash. Mash chicken muscles.
Yeah, I mean, who watches this for plot? I mean, yeah, there is no plot.
Who the fuck cares, dog? So I had to reel myself in on this one for sure.
There is a plot. It's just a really, cheap amalgamation of a bunch of other anime plots.
Yeah, it's
and Harry Potter.
I see the plot like a tortilla chip with queso. The tortilla chip is just there as a vehicle for the queso. That's the comedy deep. Is the queso. Yes.
That's deep.
Oh, okay.
Wow.
Yes.
Wow. I've never heard you say such deep things in my life, dude.
It's what Mashal makes him do, bro.
Got me thinking way too hard over this shit. But yeah, so we go back to them trying to attack the giant with magic, and it has a barrier around it. And, you know, they do the smart thing and say, hey, let's go find the guy that has his barrier up so we can go demolish this goddamn giant. Mash says, no. We don't need to do that. I have muscles. And he gets into a tug of war with a 200-foot tall, buff-ass demon. Ends up, I don't even know what to call that, twirling him around by his chain and throws him through, what, 3 mountains? And then for some reason, the whole boy just explodes. Like there's a goddamn nuke out there or something like that.
So I wanna say something.
Please do.
So I got 2 notes written down about this episode. The first note is Innocent Zero equals Blackbeard. Okay.
Okay. Yeah.
The second note is about this scene, and it is the power of friendship strikes again.
Oh, for sure. We're about to get to that. Yeah, go for it.
That's literally, even though Mash doesn't need it, it felt like the Coliseum hopping him up is like they was like making fun of the power of friendship. Did y'all not feel that way or what?
I don't think they were making fun of the power of friendship. It was more that like he was accepted by his student body finally, regardless of the fact that he doesn't have magic. You know, I thought it was kind of deep, and you're just talking about the power of friendship right now, man. That's pretty hard, pretty hurtful.
It was the power of friendship. Bass, I mean, help me out here.
I mean, more or less was the power of friendship.
It was when Finn screamed, that was the power of friendship, because that's his best bud.
Okay.
But
I thought they were going to be up there booing him for a second. I was like getting prepared to be angry at the students, and then they were like, nah, he's a great guy. I was like, hey, here we go. Yeah. Hey.
And then the Bowser toss came in, and I was crying, dude. It's like, you guys have obviously played Super Mario 64, and you'd spin in circles and throw Bowser.
Yeah.
That's all I could think of when he was launching this, whatever the fuck it was, in the mountains, like Goku punching Vegeta, dude.
I think that, isn't this more like the Donkey Kong down grab? I think he does a spinny thing and throws.
He does do a spinny. Yeah, it's the same
thing.
That's
the down grab. I think it might be the back grab, but whatever.
Yeah, it's the same thing.
Yeah, I'm showing my nerd here. Let me move on. But yeah, was the whole nuke mountain throw and nuke a little too unserious here, or are we just leaning into it, boys?
A lot of Dragon Ball Z references for me this episode. You know, we got mountains exploding. We got Perfect Cell, a.k.a. Innocent Zero, trying to suck people up.
God bless. But yeah, very, very fun episode. I enjoyed it. And in the final moments, we have Wahlberg, you know, waking up looking like a half-fried piece of bacon, learning that MASH won the fight. And he says he's the epitome of the weak. I mean, the strong taking care of the weak. Because he took care of Wahlberg, which is pretty awesome. He treated him just like a normal old man. And we know nobody else would do that. I think that's more just ignorance. But that's it for me, guys. I had a hard time pulling this this little guide together for this one. There really wasn't much there for me, personally.
This show is... I mean, at least, like, last episode, I had a hard time with it. At least this episode, it kept me, entertained, I guess. I don't know how, but it did. So I can't wait to see. I don't even know what they are going to do in the finale. Like, are they going to give MASH his divine visionary? Like, is that what's going to happen?
He saved the whole fucking school.
There will be cream puffs.
There will be green puffs.
There will hopefully be a singular door joke.
I'm praying on it.
When he goes into the room to accept his cream puff party award ceremony thing, he's going to break the door. Okay.
If there's no door break, I'm going to give this a 0 out of 10. Confirmed.
Damn.
I'm glad I'm not going to be on next week's rundown.
You're not on it either, right?
Well, next week?
Yeah. I think me and Bastard both out. It's going to be me and Kriegs and Dan. So.
Yeah, something like that. We'll figure it out.
Yeah, we're going to have to figure out how to take 2 episodes and drag it out for an hour. It's not going to be hard.
Y'all got it. Kriegs can talk, too, so he's just like us. So
if we get a lore-filled One Piece episode, it's a wrap.
I mean, it looks like it could be that way, so. Well, speaking of One Piece, do y'all have anything else to add to Mashal's episode before the finale?
That's it for me.
Negative.
Okay. Okay, so One Piece 1098, The Eccentric Dream of a Genius. In today's episode of One Piece, we're learning more about Vegapunk and what happened 200 years ago. Plus, Cypher Poe has finally made it to the island. Will Vegapunk let them in or not? We will find out next time on Mashal.
What?
Mashal. It's like Dragon Ball Z.
Oh, okay. I thought we were talking about One Piece.
God bless.
Well, we start this one off with Vegapunk discussing the robot again. You know, they can't get away from the robot. Says it was built 900 years ago and attacked Mary Joa 200 years ago. And that it wasn't able to do anything, though, because it ran out of power. Need more power, basically. Also, 200 years ago, they wanted to mention that the Fishman was actually granted rights. In the kingdom of Ryugu, which is actually the Fishman kingdom, they was able to join the Reverie during that time. So the Fishman got rights and they was able to join the Reverie. Mm-hmm. And then that same time, the mysterious robot attacked Mary Joa. So I don't... Kriegs would have been awesome to have on this because I'm sure he can think of right on top of his head or whatever. Why this is related, but why do you think that they would like? Why do you think the robot was attacking Mary Joa? Like, who sent it? Was it related to the Fishman? What are we thinking, boys?
I hope they sent a robot assassin. That'd be cool as fuck. Absolutely cool as fuck. But I don't know. I don't know. I would really like to understand why that is related, but there's no way that's a coincidence, right?
Yeah, it's Odom. Like, he's telling us this for a reason, so.
Yeah, for sure.
Just laying down the groundwork for something big. I mean, if that robot was built 900 years ago, it was built in the Void Century. And that mm-hmm. robot might have something to do with their boy Joy Boy. So I'm really interested to see where that goes.
Yeah, it's just interesting, though, that so Fishman was given rights or whatever, and he was able to attend the Reverie. So, I mean, it's obviously not the fish man, you know, attacking Mary Joa, because why would they do that? They just got their, you know, stuff given to them or whatever.
For respect. No, I'm joking. Go ahead.
I mean, yeah, I guess maybe, but.
Yeah, I mean, it could be somebody was salty that, like, some salty racist who didn't like fishmen found the robot and was able to command it to do that because of the fishmen joining the world government, so.
Okay, I thought you were going to say some salty fishmen, but.
It could have been a salty fishman, too, because they think they're better than everybody, and they know it.
I mean, yeah, they kind of are, but, yeah.
Yeah, that's what I was wanting to know. I was wanting to know if, like, the robot got sent because of the fishman getting their rights or something else, you know, which, I mean, we're not going to find out for probably a little while. So, but the giant robot's power source we hear from Vegapunk is actually what makes it so different. Vegapunk says that it defies common knowledge of the current times. So I'm wondering, like, do we have any idea what kind of power source that it could be using? Vegapunk also mentions that the energy is everywhere. He just hasn't figured out how to use it yet. Do y'all have any idea, like, what the power source that he's referencing that was using the robot might be? Any ideas at all?
I mean, not what it might be, but it's definitely something developed by the civilization that O'Hara stumbled upon.
Yeah.
Because they were so technologically advanced. I mean, the robot didn't have any solar panels on it, so don't put sun power on there, you know, with our sun god Nika. But
yeah.
Yeah,
I don't think that's it either.
He's got a little nuclear reactor inside of him, dude.
A little nuclear reactor. I don't know if the One Piece world has something like the Force that's all around us. But, I'd be interested in learning what that is. I don't really have any ideas about what it could be right now. But, I mean, maybe
it's hockey.
I was just about to say that. But, yeah.
So, the only thing that I got, like, thinking about on this is, so, we know that the robot, like, had to go a long way or whatever in order to get to Mary Joa. Mm-hmm. And so, why, like, this has to be a reason. This has to be this isn't a coincidence, right? Probably. Why did it run out when it got to Mary Joa? Is it because the source of power that it was using wasn't located at Mary Joa? Like, it wasn't able to, like, I guess, regain that power at Mary Joa? You know what I'm trying to say?
It that might be why Mary Joa is where it is. Because that power source isn't there, and the old powerful kingdom was using it. They're like, okay, let's set up right here. Maybe they can't attack us effectively here. That would make the most sense to me.
Because it's obviously recharging somehow, right? Because it made it all that way to get to Mary Joa. It just ran out of power once it got to Mary Joa. So I found that interesting, and I know that he's putting that in there for a reason. So. Dan's over there.
Okay,
smiling.
Dan. Okay.
Trying not to spoil anything for you guys.
Yeah. Appreciate you.
I see I'm on the right path then.
No, not at all.
Whoa. I thought I was on the right path. I thought I was cooking over here.
You're on a late timer.
Maybe it runs on freedom. Who knows?
That's kind of what I was thinking in my head, honestly. But I know that's stupid. But I mean, who knows? But Cypherpole Aegis is actually pulling up on Egghead right now, but the sea beasts are stopping them. This is kind of weird, like, thing to ask, but when the sea beasts were stopping them, did you think that any of them resembled people that we knew? Like, I kind of felt like I seen, like, Chopper and Kid.
I saw a little reindeer type action.
Yeah.
But I didn't see Kid. I didn't notice that one.
Yeah, I seen one that kind of resembled Kid, and I seen the one that kind of resembled Chopper, and I thought that was pretty funny. I just wonder if, like, they meant to do that, or if that was, like, an Easter egg type shit, so.
I'm sure it's probably, like, an Easter egg. Yeah. No big deal.
Yeah, did you notice any of that shit, or no?
I think it's gotta just be an Easter egg. I mean, there's some definitely funny designs there. I'm looking at a picture of them now, and yeah, I do see a reindeer sea monster with a hat on, so that makes you instantly think Chopper
for sure.
Yeah.
But yeah, I mean, you can't say red-haired on somebody's back as kid.
Well, he has the one of them's got like the freaking goggles, bro. Above his eyes. Yeah.
I think it's just Easter eggs. I don't think these things are actually based on anyone, you know. Or maybe
it'd
they just
weird
you know,
they
Oda was like, why think too hard about this? We'll just make Chopper and kid.
Or if like Lilith was like just reading the newspaper, like, I fucking like that design. Let me build a CB set of that motherfucker. Sense, you know, bro, that would that be the most sense. Logical the yeah. logical thing there, you know?
That most in universe answer. Yeah.
And getting back on track, Shaka actually denies Cypherpunk's entry, which means it's time to fight. So now we got Vegapunk versus Cypherpunk, Aegis slash the government. And, you know, it's the question, like, who we got winning, boys? Who do we think is going to win this one? Vegapunk and his clones, or whatever you want to call them, or Cypherpunk Aegis with Rob Lucci and all them?
I'm going to go Vegapunk because I think Dragon might pull up on the ass. Because he values Vegapunk's life. Also, fuck the government.
Home field advantage.
Yeah, home field advantage. A huge home field advantage. Luffy's there, and Luffy's like not about no bullshit. He's there to defend them along with the rest of the Straw Hats. Yeah, Vegapunk's got a lot backing him here.
He's also got,
and then Kuma looks like he's got the Seraphim.
Yeah.
Kuma seems like he might be pulling up, but I don't know how useful he really is because he's so damaged. It seemed like Kuma's pulling up from the rest of the episode. So, I'll put my money on Vegapunk on this one.
What about you, Dan? You going with it too?
Yeah, I'm going Vegapunk. Lucci got his ass kicked by Luffy in like episode 200, dude. Come on.
And that's the thing, like, Luffy and company is on the island with Vegapunk, and Vegapunk's trying to work something out for Luffy right now. So, I'm just kind of curious, like, do you think, so the real Vegapunk is trying to get Luffy on board, trying to have Luffy take him away or whatever, but like Lilith and them is kind of split. Lilith wants to turn him in. So do you think that's
just evil though?
Yeah. Do you think that like Vegapunk is gonna like try to stay with his deal, or you think he's gonna like let Lilith and them take like persuade him in ways?
I feel like Lilith is the worst of Vegapunk. So I don't think I don't think people generally listen to her. She's kind of there just, you know, like she's on go. She's like a crazy friend that you need like for energy in your group, but you don't really listen to. That's Lilith.
Yeah.
Okay. I see. And just like Bass said earlier, Kuma actually went crazy at the revolutionary camp. He breaks free from all his healing stuff and runs off and teleports himself away. I was going to ask, where do y'all think he's going? But I think we all have an idea. Like, I think he senses that either Bonnie's in trouble or Vegapunk's in trouble. I don't know which one it would be. Maybe Vegapunk, since Vegapunk was the one that like created him or whatever, right? So
could be both. I would like to think he would try to pull up on his daughter if he thought she was in danger, but she's also a pirate and has been captured at least once. So I don't know. Could be both.
It's definitely interesting to see. And what if he goes somewhere else? I mean, we just don't know. But apparently Lucci says that the last three Cypherpunk ships that went to Egghead never came back. Vegapunk seems to not know what's going on, really. He don't have any idea about it. So what do you think could be happening? Do you think someone's trying to set them up, like a third party? Or like, do you think they're just lying to Rob Lucci at this point?
I think this is just bullshit.
You think so? You think they're the ones that's like drowning them or whatever? Or?
Yeah, it wouldn't be the first time the world government lied. So,
nor the last.
It definitely won't be the last. But yeah, I think it's just horseshit. I'm cursing a lot tonight, but I'm feeling it. So let's go.
I like it.
Yeah, I kind of feel on the same way. I feel like Vegapunk does know about it. Because especially getting on in later bits of this episode, we actually get into Vegapunk's dream. And You know, One Piece is all about dreams, and he wants to create a world with science where energy is provided to everyone for free. And do y'all think this is actually attainable in this world with the government like the way it is? And the second part of this question is, like, how do we think this involves Luffy?
Oh, man, that's a big question. I don't think the world that Vegapunk wants is attainable with the government. But, I mean, we all know at the end of the day, somebody's going to have to topple the world government. That's like the whole thing here in the end game. Find, you know, Laftel, topple the government, make everybody free. And I think Vegapunk's dream is going to be a part of that as well.
Yeah, everyone's going to get Wi-Fi.
Yeah.
They already got Wi-Fi hockey. No, what I was trying to see too was, do we think that Vegapunk is going to be, I guess, like a Kinemon Momo type deal with the Straw Hats after, like, going forward? Like, do we think that's going to happen?
Not to that degree. I mean, we've been getting a lot of foreshadowing about the Giants. So, like, if you're going to take Vegapunk somewhere where he can be protected, I think that's going to be Elbath.
So you think they're just going to, like, go drop him off or whatever?
Drop him off all somewhere. The books.
Yeah, with the books and the literal giants that can protect him. Yeah.
And then maybe in the future come back and see what he learned and see if, like, Luffy can, like, make use of that knowledge, maybe? Is kind of what we're getting at, maybe?
I mean, the way I look at One Piece going is, like, Luffy has made so many allies through this, and we're going to have a really big battle at the end, like Marineford-esque, but, like, Straw Hat Grand Fleet, all his allies he'd made, all these, you know, all these countries he saved, everyone like that, and they're going to go at Marie Joie, and I could easily see Vegapunk's providing support on some scope in that, you know, like being like the tech guy and bringing a bunch of cool weapons and shit.
Hell yeah.
So, bunch I mean,
cyborg goons.
Yeah. This is kind of what I was trying to get at. You know, I was kind of wondering, like, are we actually in the end game right now? Because it feels like we're in the end game right now.
Oh, yeah.
You know what I mean?
Yeah, we're getting there. Oh, for sure. Yeah. We're getting there. This is towards the end of this story.
Yeah.
Yeah. Oh, yeah.
But
that kind of makes me a little sad and happy at the same time. I feel very conflicted.
Well, the good news is we're going to get a remake of One Piece, and you just start all over again.
We can relive it again.
Yes!
But at a good pace.
Hopefully. I don't think it's ever really been confirmed, like, how it's going to change or be changed or whatever.
Oh, it's going to be seasonal, dude.
Oh, okay. But, I feel like that was the biggest part of this episode, was this kind of dream thing. I thought it was pretty neat. But to basically end this One Piece episode, we also find out that the government is after Vegapunk because he investigated the forbidden history, and now he knows too much, and now he has to die. We all kind of, I guess, got the feeling that's what kind of happened, but now it's confirmed, and I just, like, want to know, do y'all think Luffy and the crew, the Straw Hats, are going to be able to save him? Or do you think he'll obviously betray Luffy and turn him in to the government in the end? Which I think we all know the answers. We know Luffy's going to win. There's no way. So
he'll get captured first.
I don't think
he's going to be captured.
He gets captured in every goddamn arc almost. He gets captured.
I don't know if you guys are ready for what's coming. That's all I'm going to say. It is insane.
Okay. Bet.
Be very excited.
See, I've you know, obviously I quit reading the manga or whatever, but I did get to the, I think I'm getting to the end of where I stopped reading at, because things are starting to get a lot more hazier, and I'm not really understanding what's going on in the long run now, especially with, like, Dragon and, like, Kuma or what. I don't even remember that shit happening. So it must be getting around somewhere around that point right now. So,
well, that's fun. That's fun. Yeah. At least two of us won't know what's going on.
Yeah, that's the only reason why I stopped reading it. That way, you know, it would be like a really fun discussion. So
I'm just going to straight up say Tyler's questions felt very targeted at me because they were asking about very, very, very important plot points. And I felt like he was just looking at me like, oh, Dan, you're going to fuck up. You're going to fuck up, Dan. You're going to fuck up.
See, it's funny that you say that.
No spoilers, Dan.
It's funny that you say that because when I was making this guide or whatever, like I was literally asking questions that I was like thinking about in real time while I was watching this, stuff like that, because I don't really know what happens anymore. Like back then, you know, I kind of knew and I kind of could like avoid it to like ride them to make it where it was easy not to spoil stuff. But now, like, you know, I don't know what's this, I don't know where I'm leading us at this point. You know what I mean? So,
oh, definitely. No, all I'm gonna say is like when Bass is like, I feel like we're getting to the end game, I was just sitting like, oh, you fucking wait, dude. Fucking wait.
But it's good to know that, you know, that I'm kind of figuring this shit out, like, or we're figuring this shit out that Oda's trying to cook for us. You know what I mean? It's fun to do that.
Hell yeah, for sure.
But that is it for One Piece, unless y'all got anything.
No, I'm good to go.
That's it for me, boys.
Hell yeah.
Awesome. Well, hope you guys really enjoyed this week's rundown. Next week, we've only got two shows on the rundown. We will have the Mashal finale and One Piece. Before that, though, we've got an announcement of our next season's rundown show. Is very excited about that. We've got three figured out and we're not sure about what to do for the fourth show, so we're actually going to bring a bunch of shows to the table and then hold some polls in Discord and on our socials. That way you guys can help us pick our last show for the rundown. Make sure to rate the podcast like Bass said. If you have any questions, want to talk about anime, linktree.com/animedegens, and we'll catch you on Thursday for our spring 2024 rundown announcement poll thingy, my Bob.
Extravaganza.
I was about to say extravaganza and I stopped myself.
Nah, dude, it had to happen.
Peak.
I almost said bonanza. I almost said bonanza was actually the word I was going to use. All right, guys. Peace.
Later.
Bye.